Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to hear what it's like growing up in Muslim culture? Want to hear what life is like in Bangladesh? Want to hear what it's like growing up a Muslim living in Texas as a little boy? This is a great episode. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. Matt Kaplan and I talk to New York comedian Usama Siddiqui. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of the apps MicSwap and AudioFix for videos. Check them out on the iTunes App Store.
G, take me away.
What's up, man?
I was nervous researching you because I got to type Usama in my Google.
Yeah, man. Same here, dude. Same here.
I figured we'd start with the most obvious, being your name.
Is Usama. Yeah. I mean, it's in 15 years, you know? So it's like, it's kind of okay. I got my ass whooped pretty regularly on September 12th and shit, you know? September 12th was a bad day for Usamas everywhere.
Did you really feel any specific backlash?
Oh yeah, specifically a guy took my back and lashed it against the wall of a bathroom. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. This guy's name is Trevor, and Trevor was sixth grade, and the day after he I was coming out of the bathroom, just fucking started wailing on me.
Just because your name was Osama.
I mean, I'm from Texas. I'm from the South, so there's a little more tension there. Have you been down the South?
Yes.
Okay.
Where in Texas are you from?
Dallas.
Okay.
Right.
Pretty tough town.
It's a pretty tough town.
Yeah, it is. They like their guns.
Only the gunslingers get out, you know?
That's like, unfortunately, the definition of American, I feel like. Cowboy.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah.
Guns.
Right. I mean, Dallas BBQ, that's like a place here. There's no such thing as Dallas BBQ.
Dallas BBQ?
Yeah, there's a New York chain.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's not even a thing, really.
Yeah, because Austin's more the BBQ
Austin
place.
And like more Western Texas, like El Paso and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've been through Texas quite a bit, actually.
Right. Oh, yeah?
Yep.
For what?
I used to play in a band and we did quite a bit of touring.
Oh, shit. So you left the band, kept a look?
Yeah.
That's it. I got
well,
you.
See, I don't like having long hair because it's such a stigma. But you don't want to see me walking around with short hair. I do better with long hair with the women's.
Long hair is a universal, man.
Felt that for sure.
I mean, dudes make fun of it because you just look so good. You know what I'm saying? Like the long hair?
If I'm being made fun of because I look so good, I will take that.
Right, straight up, dude. That's why people hate on man buns. That's why people hate on long hair sometimes because it just looks good to women. And so dudes created this hate thing with the stigma.
It's an envy.
I think it's an envy thing. That's why the stigma comes from the envy.
You probably don't get that with the name Usama.
There's no Usama envy, but there is jawline envy. I do get a lot of jawline envy.
Yeah, you have good facial structure.
Yeah, yeah. But that's just me not eating. You know, it's just...
Is that the...
I don't have a good jawline. I just don't eat enough to get a not jawline.
Well, if you don't use your jaw, it's going to turn into a mush. You're going to lose the sculpture.
Right, right. Yeah, dude. Trying to keep it hot out here. Trying to keep it 10, you know?
So, Trevor...
Yeah.
In sixth grade, just beat you up.
Yeah, man, not regularly. I remember this is one singular event where after 9/11, I mean, dude, I'll be real, man. I was getting my ass whooped before 9/11 as well. Mm-hmm. But now, post 9/11, there was like a patriotic twist to their swirlies. You know, there was like a little added
justified.
Justify a little bit of like credibility, a little ethos to their crusade. Mm-hmm. And what better target? And I was already wimpy. I was just skinny and a guy named Usama now, you know. Right.
And you're a brown person in Dallas.
A brown person in Dallas. And before they would just call me fucking asshole or idiot. And then eventually one guy I remember was like, "You get over here, Usama." And I was like, "Is he calling me by my name or is that a racial slur that he's thinking of?" And that's the kind of confusion that was going on post 9/11. Like, get over here, Usama.
No, you must have thought of changing your name.
There's a weird story. My mom came to me one day and she was like, "Hey, do you want to change your name to something a little less Muslim?"
Yeah.
Like Hussein.
Did she really
that
say
was
that?
Her line.
She really? Was she joking?
In her mind, Usama was a bad word. She still wanted a Muslim name, but one that wasn't as Muslim as Usama. And I'm like, no, I'm good.
Now, was this before the Iran?
Exactly. Edit that so he knows that it's Iraq War. Yeah, I know. I used to have a joke about this. Like, yeah, like she chose the. She's like a prophecy for my own ass whoopings.
She chose the second worst name.
Right. So after I got my ass whooped for in 2008, she'd be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, you want to change the name to something a little less Muslim, like ISIS?" You know. Yeah. She's like, 5 years later, ISIS. Like,
She's like, "How about an American name like Bill Cosby?"
nice. But my mom doesn't even know about the Bill Cosby stuff. She just sees the Cosby show still. She's like one of the only women who doesn't know about the. She's very immigranty.
Is your mom in Dallas or in Bangladesh? You're from Bangladesh, am I right?
I was actually born in Canada.
Okay.
My parents are from Bangladesh. And my dad's like from a Bengali speaking part of India, which is like East India.
Yeah.
Which is called West Bengal. And then they met. And then they came here to Canada, and then
had you in Canada.
Oh yeah.
So are you? You have a Canadian citizenship?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So you're not. I can't vote.
Oh wow, interesting. So how are you here? You go to school here? They moved.
No.
They moved
here. A permanent resident. So okay. I'm an alien, basically.
Yeah.
So I have a permanent res card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now you must have thought of changing your name.
Yeah, a little. But I was like, there was a time when I wanted to change my name, but I was like, I don't have any good ones to change it to.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought of Adolf?
Adolf. I was leaning towards Waldo. Not even joking. Like Waldo was going to be a thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, you know what? It's too much hassle. I don't have the funds.
Well, like even Barack Obama changed his name. You know, he was Barry for many, many years.
Oh, yeah?
Barry Obama.
And now it's Barack. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And at some point he's like, you know what? I'm just going to be Barack. Okay.
Then we would have both been Husseins then. Fucking.
Yes. Right?
Amazing. Yes. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, the name thing wasn't that bad, dude. I was getting my ass whipped for other more shitty reasons than the name thing.
Because of the way you look. And
the way I looked, right? I have this like, lazy eyelid, you know? They used to beat on that. I was a very easy target.
Would they beat on the lazy eye or the eye that
who
could see?
Was this Trevor? I don't even know if left eye was Trevor. Who knows? And I was actually born with this lazy eyelid. And it's like, they would just hit everything. They would, I mean, not regularly, but everyone. Trevor was the guy that was... If I was getting my ass whooped, it was Trevor.
And if I had to think of a bully's name, it would probably be Trevor.
Straight up, dude. Trevor. Yeah. Trevor was the dude. He was such a stereotypical dude. Like, you know, divorced parents, lives in a trailer park.
Angry.
Yeah. And then this 9/11 shit happened, and he's like, "What the fuck? Get fucking me."
You know? Easy target,
man.
Yeah.
And you have any idea what happened to Trevor?
I hope he has 8 kids. I really do. I only wish the worst upon him.
And they're all voting for Trump.
They're all voting for Trump. And they all live in the same trailer park he grew up in. And his 5-year-old has syphilis, I'm sure. You know, that kind of shit.
Have you looked him up on Facebook?
No, he doesn't have Facebook, which is a good sign.
He can't even afford a Facebook.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
Hey, Trevor, it's free.
Right. But maybe he's still on Zanga. That's what all he can afford. He can just afford like the oldest.
He's like, heck, no one's accepting my friends in the request.
Because you don't have any friends, dude. Oh, Trevor, dude.
All right, there's a lot here I want to talk to you about, like, all the different cultures, the different culture changes, and also growing up Muslim, right?
Mm. Very Muslim, dude.
Very Muslim.
I didn't have my first kiss until like college. I didn't know what jacking off was until college.
You never masturbated?
Never masturbated until first week of college. I mean, I would have wet dreams.
Yeah.
Because if you don't jack off, eventually it just comes out in the form of wet dreams every 2 to 3 days,
no
matter what.
Never have wet dreams?
I would never have wet dreams. So every 2 to 3 days, no matter what the dream was, I would have a wet dream.
Yeah.
So I would just be like thinking about a kite or something, and I'd wake up in my own cum. Just
a sexy kite?
Sexy kite. Like, am I attracted to fun? What's going on? And it's like... It was a whole different thing. And it would just come out because I wouldn't jack up. And it's a very unnatural thing for a boy not to jack up. Mm-hmm. And so,
But you were in school here in the U.S., right?
Right. But all my friends were also Muslim dudes. We all had a taboo. We never used to talk about sex or anything mm-hmm. sexual. And even if a guy liked a girl, we'd stop it. We're like, no, we're not doing this. This is weird.
Why? What is the Muslim tradition that...
It's like there's no premarital anything.
No, you know, premarital.
I mean, no sex for sure. Premarital sex out of the
kill. Premarital touching.
I mean, there's dating, but it's really you're dating to marry someone. So, but ideally in Islam, you the culture Islam, not the religion, but the culture, you meet someone at 22, mm-hmm. you hang out with them for a year, and then you marry them. And there's nothing before, nothing after. It's like a really repressed thing. You buy into it when you're a kid because you're just like, oh, this is the guilt. They
give
you
the norm.
That's who you are. So yeah, I didn't know how to talk to girls. I didn't know what jacking off was. I didn't know, like, I don't even look down there. I probably didn't clean my dick for like the first, 17 years. I didn't know what to do.
So you're just like, you're in the shower and you're just like, what is that
what
thing?
The fuck? I don't want to think about it. He's just here. It's just like, stranger danger.
You're like God's one mistake.
Right. What is this? Give me a sign.
Well, it always amazes me about most religions is that God is so powerful and does all this stuff, but then, you can't. You know, you have to cut your dick because it's not normal the way it was.
Right. Like he figure it out before you throw him out,
Right, yeah.
But that's just it's just all these funny traditions. But like, yeah, man, the Muslim thing really held me down sexually, development-wise for a long time. Like,
but you're in school in Dallas for most of the time.
So I was like from fourth grade to college, end of college, I was in Dallas.
So do you think because you're in Dallas, like maybe if you went to school in New York, you'd be interacting with more diverse people?
For sure. I probably would have known about jacking off. Wait, I mean, these kids nowadays have sex at like 8, 9, 10. Yeah. They're fucking, dude. Where are they fucking?
Yeah.
Where are these kids fucking?
Elementary school.
But inside? Like where?
Playground.
The slides these days?
The slide. Oh, no.
It's perfect. Yeah, so but you think because that just enforced you being sheltered, hanging out with other Muslim kids?
Yeah, man. All the Muslim kids that I know, we've all sloughed it off a little bit. I still have a spirituality to me, but like that, all that rigid structure is basically gone.
But born again Christians and heavy Christians are the same.
What do you mean?
They don't believe in premarital sex.
Okay, you're right, right. But you can do anal, right?
That's the loophole.
Anal loophole. Right?
God doesn't look back there.
Right, right. If you're underneath a bridge that you can't see, God doesn't have X-ray vision,
I've actually talked to a bunch of born-again Christians. They were on some retreat or something, and I just ended up having a conversation, and they were all like, oh, yeah, we do anal because that preserves our virginity.
Oh, my God. Come
so
on.
Your high school, it was mixed? Right.
Yeah,
it was
a co-ed, public school, all that. Yeah.
So was there no sex education, biology?
So
anything like that?
So like I'm telling you, man, I don't know. I can remember my head learning the sex education. I just remember not learning it. Like I saw the video. I was at the puberty video.
Right.
I used to get boners, and I was like, this is intense. What's going on here?
Well, did you feel guilty when you got them?
No, I didn't know it was a thing to be guilty. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. Right. There's blood filling and spongy tissue, and that's all I know.
You didn't think I'm being inhabited by the devil.
Right. Right. I'm not that weird, all right? Okay, like those weird Christian chicks, like
I shouldn't have even had that thought.
Right, right. I look down at those girls too, all right? Like, get yourself together, right? But I remember looking at the video, seeing everything and not getting it. I didn't get it, Like I thought penises were universal until eighth grade. I never had a penis. Ninth grade, I learned about AIDS before I learned about sex. So someone was like, I thought sex was kissing someone and the saliva would go down to your stomach and create a baby, right?
Wow.
And I was so against that idea of kissing a girl. I was like, fuck that. Mm. Fuck that sinning. I was going to spit into a cup, give it to my wife, be like, drink this, okay? And then get a baby.
Wow.
That was literally how I thought I was going to do it for the rest of my life.
So your parents never sat you down and had a sex conversation?
No, no. Mm-hmm.
Were you worried about the wet dreams? Like, am I sick? What's going on
here? No, I enjoyed
the
feeling. Enjoyed the feeling. I was like, I used to do this thing. Okay, dude, I'm telling you, man. I look back, I'm like, who is this guy? I used to not jack off, right? But I used to do these inexplicable things that were like subconscious desires to get off. So I'd like wait till my parents were asleep at 3 a.m. and walk out naked into the street.
Mm-hmm.
I just walk out naked and I'd feel the breeze. And I would like the breeze on my body. Mm-hmm. And I would get the boner and I used to like that boner.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to create. I used to be like, there's got to be another way.
You would never just put your hand down there?
No, right. Wow. That's what I'm saying. It's weird. Like the religion created my own mental path.
See,
neuronal pathways that created
what we're like hearing now is how religion creates dysfunction.
Yeah, it's in that sense. I think religion can do a lot of good things, but sexually it does fuck up a lot of kids, man.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that are very deep. And so I would just wait for the breeze, and I would like the breeze. It was like breeze windsturbation, right? So like I would just wait
for the
wind, and I was like, oh, this is it. And I remember thinking in my head one day, I was like, there's got to be a way to channel the wind in a repeated motion to create a sense of self propelling stimulation. And I was like on the it was like Einstein on relativity. I was like right there for jacking off, like right there. I was this close.
You're like, we really need to switch to wind turbine energy now.
Right. So it was like my finger was on jacking off. I just never figured it out, and I didn't have any outside. Usually your friend tells you, or like when you're five, like, yo, you gotta try this out.
Yeah.
Or so I, but then when all your influences are also Muslim, it's like, how do you?
But I don't even think your friends would tell you. I think it's just something that you do. Like you knew to go outside really? And naked.
I never had the instinct to put my hand down my dick, my hands up.
But I wonder if that came from something with your upbringing.
I've been searching for the answer to this for a long time. Like, is it a religion thing? Is it just like, I was also a guy who was very much not in a passive like liver of life. Liver, that's fine. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. passive. Just live passively.
Yeah.
And all I did was play video games. That was my wholehearted passion forever. My entire life was video games. So I played everything, but in a way that is like, not an addiction, but it's like a passion. It's like my reason for being. So like, I never decided to learn anything.
Right.
I never decided to learn. I was just naturally smart enough to get A's all the time. My neurons were just geared to get A's. I was good at memorizing things from a young age. And I never learned anything, really. I just killed it at school. So nobody really asked questions. I just played video games all day.
You're textbook smart.
Textbook smart. Very textbook smart.
Yeah.
Wasn't really smart in any other way. Just, I had no idea.
Right.
And then I would just play video games. And instead of learning about the world, I would just play video games all day, every day, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never learned anything. I never had any curiosities about my body except for video games.
But I would think that would be a natural. Like, Matt, how did you know to jerk off?
I feel like, you know, just watching movies, like as a kid,
yeah,
you know, like R-rated movies and stuff like that, I knew it was something. And I figured out at some point that would happen. And then, you know, there was always like the friend that hit puberty like years before everyone else.
Right. So some and he sort spread of cultural, the
word. Yeah. It just seemed like it was kind of part of it. And, you know, exactly. It's, you know, something maybe you keep from your parents, but otherwise it's something you discuss with your friends. And it's you know, part of everyday life.
Yeah.
No idea. Dude, exactly.
Were you not watching American movies?
I was. It's like I was a kid who was like seeing things, but not absorbing information.
Mm.
I think that's what it was. It's not even a religion thing. Religion helped me be, and this is interesting. I've never really talked about it like this. This is very interesting. I've never actually thought about it like this. I think a lot of it was I was a person of the world, but I wasn't in the world. I was just kind of, all the information was coming in. I wasn't really absorbing it because my only idea was finish homework, play video games, and that's it.
Well, I think this happens from moving around a lot and also being a different culture in a different culture.
Right, right.
That you're
the cultural thing for sure. Yeah,
it's yeah. Like, I think when you move around a lot, it's hard to feel connected to a place.
Okay, I can see that a lot actually. And then I moved from Canada to New Jersey to Dallas very quickly, and so maybe in a formative time, I was just like, I don't know.
But also, you move there, like especially in a place like Dallas, where people have a lot of Texan pride.
Yes.
And you're like, I don't relate.
Who are what?
Yeah.
Everything's bigger in Texas except women's rights. You know what I'm saying? Like it was just a life that I wasn't really living.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it makes sense you would feel on the outside.
Yeah, very outside. Oh, very outside. And I felt ugly, and people used to call me ugly when I was growing up, like very much. Yeah, a lot of shit. Childhood was not like a steady, stable time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get called Amanda Henson and Christy, these two girls.
Yeah.
Used to call me ugly. Used to make fun of my face.
Uh-huh.
And I only wish that, ideally, those two are now living with Trevor, and they're all living with syphilis and AIDS and all that. Yeah.
Have you found them on Facebook?
Henson is a Muslim now. And I'm like, interesting. Not on my watch.
You know, wow.
Yeah, yeah. She's a Muslim now, and I think she's marrying some Muslim guy. But
well, she wasn't a Muslim then.
No, I think she started dating a Muslim guy. Now she's probably not even a bad person anymore. It was just like back in the day,
right? Or like we said earlier, she had the envy. She really liked you, and right. She liked your dark skin and Muslim upbringing. And that's why she made fun of you.
Don't do that to me. My whole life has been vengeance against this one girl. Don't take away the fuel.
Away his power.
We have a man Henson right here, right now. And you bring her, I'm like, nah.
But that is an interesting thing. You can be fueled by anger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could use it.
I agree. I think it's a cheaper fuel than genuine inspiration and the joy of the journey. But like, I still think anger can power of many years of your life.
Yeah, absolutely, sure. Yeah. It's like 40% of the corn oil they put in it.
Corn oil, yeah.
All right, so you get to college, and then you hear about masturbation, and you're like, fuck this, I'm going
right,
for it.
Right, right. So I get to college, and I'm telling you, I'm college, it's college. Yeah, and yeah. I'm like, I don't know what jacking off is. I've never like really tried it. I don't know. I've never had kissed a girl in my life. You know, I'm just going in and very like, oh, geez. I remember my friend, one of my best friends, Praju, he was like, I was jacking off the other day. I'm like, what do you mean jacking off? And he's like, what? You know what jacking off is?
Wow.
And he's like, what? And I thought porn was a sin. I thought porn was a straight up sin. So I never even tried it. Never tried looking at it.
Now, where did you get that idea that it was a sin?
Islam, straight up. That's classic Islam right there.
Yeah, see, I want to, before we get too far ahead, I want to delve into this. So okay. You were raised Muslim.
Yes.
So you're just in just all the customs.
Akbar, la 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 la, yeah, all that.
What
yeah.
language were they speaking in your home?
Bengali.
Bengali.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and my parents weren't even that religious, really, mm-hmm. but they had a lot of Muslim values in their culture. So Islam is so intense that it like permeates in the culture as well. So Bengali culture,
right,
which is really passed down from Islamic culture, a lot of it. You know, you can't culture is religion, right? And so in their culture, it's like you can't sex, you can't porn, you can't. Mm-hmm. But that's not really Bengali. That's just like trickle down from Islam, really.
Right, because it's a big part of the culture.
Right, so it's not that my mom and dad weren't praying 5 times a day, but they were very traditional in their culture.
Right. So well, I think Jews, Matt and I are both Jewish. Okay. I'm not a religious person. Okay. I'm a spiritual person. Right. But I think Jews are similar where they love their customs and traditions.
You almost say customs. You almost
said it. So much of it is so silly to me.
Right. But it's the customs that you hold down to, because that's what kind of grounds you in the chaos of the world a little bit.
Right. But it also isolates you, because I really think human nature, is tribalism.
Yeah.
Like people have to feel like they belong to a tribe.
Yes, yes.
And that comes with the customs and the traditions. It's like, no, we're this.
Right.
We're tribe B.
And I do think it does hold back in terms of connection, but it also helps against depression a lot of times. I think a lot of white dudes in New York who don't have that sort of bedrock end up depressed and like sort of like flotsam because they don't have like an anchor. Right. Whereas a lot of minorities, they have that sort of shared conflict or shared like set of cultural values that really does bring you a part of something more, which I think humans really desire.
Absolutely. I think that's a part of human nature, is to feel like you said, to feel like you're anchored onto something bigger than yourself. Right.
I think the main challenge is, can you be anchored to your globe? Can you be anchored to a human race? Because that's the guy who has empathy for gays and empathy for everyone. It's the guy who looks at himself as a human first and a Bengali second. You know?
I was trying to make this into a bit, but like...
Here we go.
I think it would be awesome if there was another life form on another planet and they invaded.
Yeah.
And we... Because that's how you unite people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Over a common enemy.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden we all be earthlings.
Right.
Fighting these aliens.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. You know.
And then we could still have our sense of tribalism, but it's on a bigger scale.
Right. 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 Exactly. It's like when the Bloods and the Crips meet together to fight the cops.
Exactly.
Boom. Boom.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nice.
So it's more of a cultural thing, though you're still going to mosque every week?
Mosque every week, you know, going to Eid, like all the cultural things that come with that, the Islam we were doing.
Now, honestly, was there bigotry in that?
What do you mean, bigotry in that?
Like, did you have a feeling towards Jews? Did you have a feeling towards Christians?
I used to hate gays, not Christians. Because Christians were the one God. Jews were the one God. So we were like, oh, there are people. So we let them into our tribe.
So any religion that idolized one god that
exactly.
So Hindus, no,
looked down on them when I was growing up because they're like, oh, the 18 gods, and then but I was like, you're Indian, so I'm cool with you,
right?
Because
Bengal,
so you choose the tribe, but you choose which tribe you want.
Well, they're your neighbors,
exactly. Yeah. I'm looking back, I'm so ashamed of this stuff, but like, yeah, I used to like hate on gay people. Mm-hmm. I remember me and my friend, we used to like hate on gay people because like. We used to like have sleepovers where we'd hate on gay people, but we were hating on gay people while like sharing a sleeping bag. Like, so it was like two dudes cuddling, being like, "What's the deal?" And it's such an ironic, weird, stupid thing. But like, we just like would say like it's so unnatural. The Legos don't fit was one of our favorite catchphrases. We're like, "The Legos don't fit. The Legos don't fit." And we thought it was so clever and so stupid.
And yet, you probably never even knew one.
I learned to know one in 10th grade, and then that stopped a lot of the hate because he's a cool friend and he came out and I was like, I can't.
Now, is that yeah. bigotry trickled down from Islam?
Bengalis and Indians don't like gays on a cultural level either.
Indians neither,
man.
Hindus?
Hindus don't like, nobody likes gays.
I mean, all religions, all people, all around the world, people don't like gay people.
They don't like gay people, man. Africans hate gay. Like, everyone hates gay people. Really, they do. It's illegal to be homosexual in a lot of these countries. India, I think it is.
I want to bring this up to you because this is super current, but in researching you last night, and then I started to research Bangladesh. Did you see this in the news?
What are you talking about?
Basically all the gay people went into hiding in Bangladesh.
Yes. Oh, Bangladesh is a terrible place. I'm going there in like 2 days.
I know. And I was like, oh my God, he's going there.
There are atheist bloggers getting murdered every 2 weeks. Right. It's like Russia, basically.
You can't speak out in public.
Yeah, you can't speak out in public. The Islamists are getting, ISIS is like, is it ISIS? It's a lot of militant people. ISIS is there, but it's like, it's more like the people are, like, Islamist extremism is coming up and it's like, oh, dude,
it's becoming more extreme.
Yeah. Oh, my family's extreme. Like, I don't know how I'm gonna fucking drink at this wedding. You know, like,
all right, because Islam doesn't allow alcohol.
Oh yeah, for sure. Actually, this could get me murdered. I realize this, but
this podcast.
Yeah. Do you have any ISIS fans?
Well, let's put this out when you come home. should we sit on it for a couple of weeks?
Honestly, just whenever you guys put it out. But
no, I do not want to be responsible for your death. I really don't want that.
It's great publicity, Gary.
That's true.
I will have a note in my fan. It was Gary's fault. I will make sure that happens. But and that'll just like put you through the roof in terms of.
Yeah, wow. I'm nervous for you going there. I mean, when I was reading this news article,
right?
You know, they're coming to people's homes. Someone posted on Facebook, and then they broke down their home.
Oh yeah, dude, it's not even. Oh my God.
And like legally brought up on charges.
Yeah.
And attacked. It's crazy.
It's scary. And I wear earrings. I'm gonna take those off to go to Bangladesh. Don't even.
Are you going to bring your boyfriend?
Well, I'm going to suck his dick first before I leave, but I'm going to make sure. No, man, but like, yeah, I'm going to make sure I look as straight as possible and stuff like that. But yeah, it's...
Are you nervous?
I'm a little nervous, man. I'm a little...
So Bangladesh as a culture, as a country, is becoming more extreme?
I think the urban centers for sure. Rural areas don't even change that much. Like really rural areas stay... you know, Harlem really doesn't change.
Well, that's the odd thing that you just said. The city centers are becoming more extreme. Usually it's the opposite.
Oh, really?
Usually, and you know, historically, at least in the United States, as far as I know.
Oh.
When you combine all the different cultures, it ends up being
interesting,
liberal.
Interesting. I feel like third world countries are far more subsistence living to even have opinions about stuff sometimes. Like, they're just poor, so poor that their only thoughts are food.
Right.
How do I, the seasons.
Basics.
So it's like, there's no time to like have ideas. Because you got to feed your 18 kids.
Yeah, they say.
Because there's no condoms in the villages.
Philosophy, spirituality is a luxury of the leisure class.
Oh, dude. Nice. Which is interesting because I feel like some of the poorest people are also some of the most spiritual. But like, the philosophy you guys like
to give hope.
Voltaire isn't a guy that you know the rice farmer reads.
Right.
It's not time. It's not applicable to him really.
Right. It's for different purposes. It's more not to ponder other things, but to just give hope.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm slightly not terrified, but you know, cause I'm Bengali, I'll be fine. They'll be like, you're one of the good ones, and they'll shoot my white friend. You know, but like, you know, but. They might say like say this in Bengali, and my Bengali is at like a third grade level, so it's like what's fog in Bengali? I'm like shit, and then just that's
but
it.
You don't speak it still with your parents?
I do. But it's I'm still. I mean, I'm like.
So your parents aren't very bright, is what you're saying?
Nice. That one's for you, mom. But yeah, dude, they're very smart. It's just like. when you're in America, you can only learn so much Bengali because there's so many influences.
Are you losing it?
I'm not losing because I have a bedrock. I can read and write it as well.
Yeah.
But I've stayed stagnant at a third, fourth grade level of Bengali.
Now, if I went to Bengali...
Already fucking up.
If I went to Bangladesh,
I would not say that. If I went to Brownistan.
If I went to Bangladesh, would I be... what, should I be concerned?
Dude, I don't think you... It's not as dangerous as Pakistan. All okay. right, Pakistan is really terrorist cell, and definitely release this after I come back, by the way, please.
Definitely.
I just realized what I'm saying here. But yeah, you would... the long hair would not be appreciated. Mm-hmm. You look American. You look like the devil, in a sense, to a Bengali old person. You know, if I was ISIS, I would not like you.
Because sure. I look American, or because...
You look, like, I know you have a beard and you kind of look ISIS-y, right? A little. Yes. But really, you don't to a person who, in India or Bengali, because you look very, very much either Arab, right. and, but like in a way that's like American. Like they know you're American immediately.
They would.
They would. Because the Arab is a...
Would they know I was Jewish?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think so, actually. But yeah, they know you were American and they would not like
it. So basically, I have the worst possible look. Yeah. To Americans, I look Muslim. Yeah. And to Muslims, I look American.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm in like the hate zone.
Yes, yes.
The hated zone.
It's called the Levitt. but yeah, yeah. So you would be fine, honestly. If you just, people can travel and be fine. But just be careful. You right. know, don't go to Pakistan. Bangladesh will be fine. Everyone's too lazy there. Everyone's too busy watching cricket all the time to hate on people. You know, right. so like all the aggression between races comes out in cricket.
It's so sad because I got removed from an American airplane.
Yeah.
So if I was flying a Bangladesh yeah. airline, I'd get removed for being American.
Right. Oh, dude, and you don't want to go on the airline either, man. It's just jeez.
Yeah, they're still pedaling.
They're pedaling. They got rickshaws going up and down.
People on the wings with kites,
mosquitoes. You gotta have a net around you in the seat. It's crazy, man.
That's another thing I saw in Bangladesh. You have to sleep in a net because yeah. the mosquitoes are.
Yo, bro, that is good research, man. I don't know. What, nice, dude. This is impressive.
Well, this is the part of the podcast I like. I get yeah. to research people. Very and cool. Take all this.
Very
stuff
cool. Yeah, you feel sit in a mosquito net because in summer especially. They are everywhere. So and if you leave one crack open, they're gonna find it. The mosquitoes come in and they go to town, dude. All the arms, every face. They don't give a shit.
A good Zika type.
Zika, bro. Mosquitoes? Zika is starter. All right, we're talking dengue. Dengue Musha is like dengue fever.
Yeah.
Killed a lot of Bengalis, a lot of people across the world. That is the mosquito you got to watch out for. The white ones. The one with the white tails. Watch the fuck out. Zika is some pussy shit compared to dengue, dude. And then malaria is not... It's being eradicated slowly, but malaria is passing mosquitoes as well.
Wow.
You just got to watch out.
So sleeping is dangerous in Bangladesh.
Dude, breathing is... dude, you go... Have you been to third world country?
No, I'd say Mexico's the poorest.
Don't even. That's not that they have roads and stuff. That dude, you go to Bangladesh, go to India. You don't have a mental algorithm to teach you what it feels like.
Yeah,
the sight, smell, every sense is has not felt that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggest any white person or for American whatever go to
experience that.
Go to some shitty little country and just like be blown away by. How different. I mean, it is, you don't have anything that to prepare you for it.
Yeah. Does that make you feel more grateful for the things here?
Yeah, for sure. My cousins are doing, they're fine, you know, but they also kind of, they had a starving period. My dad is from a poor, poor village. He's one of those classic, like, read your way out of the village. Mm-hmm. He's the only way to escape. Like, he used to read by fireflies and, you know, village shit. Like, he'd, like, trap fireflies and just read.
No way. I'm like, trap fireflies right, in a jar?
Yeah, and then read basically. I'm like, dude, this is some village shit, dude.
That's so cool, though.
I know. My dad's awesome. My dad's, like, he's got, like, two PhDs. He's, like, one of the smartest. He's the smartest guy I know. And he was this village, just village rat. And then read his way up to go to a college in Bangladesh. Got first or second in the statewide exam, the countrywide exam, that got him a scholarship to USSR. So he studied in Russia when I was in undergrad, basically. It's like my undergrad was his Russia. So that's when from 18 to 22, he was in Russia. Brezhnev, straight up. My dad's a communist. Definitely released this after.
So simultaneously, you're getting your college education here in the States.
Yes.
And your dad's getting his master's.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. Sorry. I'm saying in my life, like my development, when I was his age.
Right.
or sorry, when he was my age, he was in Russia. So right. That's what I meant.
You haven't been his age yet.
No, exactly. He's fucking 65. But he was in Russia, and he's like, he loves communist Russia. He was like, there was no crime in the streets, you know, stuff like that. He
went from Bangladesh to Russia. So it's a big step up.
Big step. I mean, dude, yeah. He's the rags to riches, man. And then from there, he went to Canada.
He must have been like, whoa.
This guy's life, man. It's unreal. It's unreal. My dad's life is unreal. And he found my mom in Bangladesh, mm-hmm. right? And then my mom was always this woman who wanted like a village guy who pulled himself up from the bootstraps. My mom mm-hmm. wanted like a little orphan boy to marry. And so, right, like, see, like, she fell in love with him. And they were like this, the only not arranged marriage in the world or something.
Do they arranged marriages
all the time,
in Bangladesh?
All the time.
Well, they say arranged marriages have a higher success rate.
They do. Only because the women have less power.
Right.
Know? That's probably what it is mostly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But my dad and mom, they met, and then like, all that good stuff, and then they got the scholarship to Canada, studied there, then from there to New Jersey to Texas. My dad's in Alabama now. Is teaching like engineering and stuff.
And they're still together.
Yeah, they're still together.
Do your relatives in Bangladesh hold it against you guys?
No, they love us. We're the stars of the family. They never have that. It's, you know, when the resentment starts is when they come to America and they want to make their own thing. And they're like, yo, now we have like a rivalry thing going. Mm. But they don't know. No, most of my family is in Bangladesh. And so I'm excited to go see them again. But I'm wondering how much of them have huge beards now. You know,
right? Because it become more extreme.
Yeah, with dude. One of my cousins. Oh my god, so militant. He's like one of his opening lines to me one day was like, "You know, Osama bin Laden was bad." Sure. I'm like, yo, you know, stop right now. Right. I want to hear what happens.
You know, the next word is but.
But, and I'm like, I don't need to hear the other end. And like, dude, it's like, listen, tell me one bad thing he did. I'm like, dude, he's militant. These guys are militant. Some of my cousins are militant people. It's like it's a different environment there. It's like really stuff you think for granted here. Like, yeah, everyone hates ISIS.
How do you resolve that in your head? Because some of these people would love to murder some of your closest friends here, probably.
Murder is a strong word, but like not like for sure.
Okay. They're not violent.
They just have like most Bengalis are just guys with like, same here. Everyone's got like, well, you know what I would do? You know what I would do if I was president? Like, you know, shut up. Finish your PBJ.
The Westboro Baptist Church people, they don't attack. They're not violent.
Right.
And does anyone, either family back in Bangladesh or your immediate family, have feelings about you being in New York?
I was the kid who was supposed to be a doctor. Like, I got into med school, supposed to go to med school in A&M in Texas, and I didn't do it. And I was gonna be the first doctor in the family, in the whole family. Like, literally from the beginning of our time to now, because my family has no coat of arms. We're just like a bunch of watermelon vendors and bricklayers. And then I was gonna be the first, literally the first doctor in the history of the Siddiqui world.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm gonna go do comedy. And it crushed everyone. The ripple effect was insane. Like they have a day where like they cry. It's called the day Usama rejected med school. It's a whole thing.
What happened? Why the right turn?
Oh, I found comedy, man. Mm-hmm. Comedy was the thing.
What turned you on to comedy? What happened?
Being funny, man. So the shitty childhood where I wasn't getting any friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. I started being funny, and I realized that that was getting me friends and acceptance. And I was like, this is fucking it. Whatever this is, where I say something and you laugh, I'm about this.
Yeah.
And I kept cultivating that over the years, and just.
But wouldn't becoming a doctor get you acceptance as well?
But it was the acceptance I wanted. Mm-hmm. I already had book smarts. That never fulfilled me.
Right.
But the funny thing really spoke to my soul a little bit. I was like, this is it, man. This is what I want to do.
And it's not just laughs. It's just an instant gratification. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I just made Amanda Henson laugh.
Yes. Oh, bringing her back. I would love it if she was right behind that door and we had to like figure this out, you know?
were you funny as a kid when Trevor was trying to beat you up?
No, I had no lines. I should create some and like rerun it in my head. But I started being funny in like high school.
Because they say a lot of comedians, they develop like Chris Rock, I think, said he developed a comedy because it helped him not get beat up.
Right. For me, I wasn't funny. I was just getting beat up. And in high school, I started being a little funny. And then by college, I was the funny guy, whatever. I was always trying to make people laugh. And, I needed it. It was not in a good place, too. Because like, back then, my funny was very attached to my ego. I needed the laugh where I felt inadequate. Now, as I do stand up more and more, I'm getting less. That need is going, and just the joy of doing is becoming more of the the overall feeling now.
Right.
Because, you know, when you're preoccupied with the results of your funny, then it's up and down. You know, you have, sometimes you're on, sometimes you're not. And then that's just like, that's too much of a storm in terms of my ego, you know.
Before we get to comedy, let's stay on this for a little bit longer. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of people can relate because a lot of people, when they go back to their families for Thanksgiving or whatever, they have to deal with a lot of extreme sort of right-wing views and just keep their mouths shut.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
So this is what, I mean, you're leaving for Bangladesh in 2 days.
Yeah, yeah, you wish you had.
But no, this, I feel like, is more extreme. Am I right?
Yeah, oh, for sure. For some might say extremist, you know? It's like, it's different, but yeah, dude, it's, because like, I hear these comics talking about like, their white grandpa saying the N-word. I'm like, dude, that's a nice guy. He didn't he didn't punch anyone, you know? My family has like, they're rough around the edges. They got like there might be some murder in my family, like in deep, like one of my great uncles I think might have murdered, like it was like a thing where they murdered one of my other great uncles because of a dispute over mangoes and stuff, like a mango tree thing.
But it wasn't a hate crime, it was a mango crime.
It was a mango crime, which is actually worse in Bangladesh. But yeah, it's a property thing. A lot of so the mango tree was on like his property. So whose property was it? This happened a long time ago. And like, that's my family, there's like a murder in my family. And stuff
but
like
there
that.
Are laws and there's some sort of judicial system.
Yeah, I thought you said jujitsu system. Every Bengali knows jujitsu. No one knows how to lay down the lub. But yeah,
like you can't just murder your cousin.
Yeah, back then it was. I mean, in the '40s, okay. No man's land. I mean, dude, it was just crazy. Now, I mean, there's a lot of love between my family, but there's a lot of like the property. It's all about prop. People kill people over property in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. So like, who leaves who what to who? And like, Bangladesh has like 8 kids. Everyone has 8 kids. So when the grandma and grandpa die, the family falls apart because the 8 kids are vying for one plot of land, which is everything in Bangladesh.
That happens a lot here.
Yeah,
too.
Right. Land owning is huge. It's the biggest thing. There's a word in Bengali for property killing. That's how, you know what I'm saying? I don't know the word for it, but like...
It's that's like how common it is.
Right, right. It's fucking unreal.
Are you going to have a trouble when you're going to hear all these ideas? They're probably going to be very excited to tell you their opinions. I imagine, because that's
give
how
me
people
brochures
are.
Like, try this brochure out, Death to America, the brochure.
Yeah, I mean, how do you keep your...
It's not that bad. It's really one cousin that I'm wondering how he's going to be.
Yeah.
One cousin. Everyone else is chill. We're all just trying to get laid and have a good time, you know?
No, but they're not trying to get laid.
They are trying to get, you know what I'm saying? Like, quote. Like, by getting laid, I mean married. They're trying to get married, which is getting laid.
Okay. Yeah.
People get married so they can get laid. That's how...
So most people just have sex with one person their whole life.
Yeah. See, officially, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But in poor areas, everyone has sex all the time. The poorer the area, like in villages, it's very, very taboo, but everyone has sex all the time.
Yeah.
But it's super duper. Like, if someone found out, you'd be shunned, exiled from the village.
They have sex with different partners.
Yeah, it's crazy. But that's a class thing, I think, more like. I think poor, in Bangladesh, poor people just like, you know, it's the ones who have class and who have status that don't.
So is that considered a lower class thing to do, to have a lot of different
yes,
partners?
Yes.
And they're probably like,
yeah, more for me.
You know, rich we'll idiots. Take that status.
Exactly.
Right, right. It's repressed cultures, I think. Badness comes out. Evil, which is not evil, is seen as evil. So you think you're bad or you're not bad, and it's like repression does a lot of bad things, in my opinion. Just a lot of like unsaid and things that come out later on, and like you know, just unhealthy emotions when you suppress and repress a culture.
But, yeah, and when you repress natural human nature, like lust,
right, you know, right, you know, right, right,
attraction,
exactly. And dude, it's an interesting thing, because Arabs used to be the most forward thinking people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be the ones at the forefront of mathematics. We used to be the ones at the forefront of like thought and philosophy, you know, and that's all just the different rulers destroyed it, you know.
Why do you think it's stopped?
I think when some certain people come in power, they can change a whole environment. Like back in the day, it was a lot of empires and like a lot of rulers. So if a ruler wasn't cool, the whole thing would just stop. So, you know, Iran was very, and Afghanistan, they were very like forward thinking in the 70s, right? Like before CIA and all that came in.
I don't know.
Iran was like one of the most forward-thinking countries.
Forward-thinking in what way?
Oh, like Western values. Like, yeah, forward is a word.
Because you could say the hijackers of 9/11 were forward-thinking.
Right. Nice. That's good. No, as in very like advanced human rights and advanced sort of like women's rights and like stuff like that. And then I think, I'm not really sure about this, but we came in and we put our own guy in that would listen to us. That guy set Iran back 100 years. They've gone, and then now they're like this culture that we know now. But yeah, in the 70s, they were very, 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 very modern.
But how much of it is the country and how much of it is just the religion not evolving?
I think it's more an oligarchy of people who don't look at it as an evolved religion. So it's like it's the interpretation of a couple of very fundamentalist people that are scary and that they are very intent on making sure that their values are released onto the culture.
Right, it's how they interpret it.
Right, so it's like the views of a few that are destroying the culture and the progress of many.
I could personally relate to it in sense of Judaism, where like Orthodox Jews are complete aliens to how I was raised as very reformed.
Were you know how I said, right? Like,
okay. I'm barely
Jewish. You have the curls? Okay.
They're under the long hair, yeah.
Dude, nice.
And I'm actually wearing a yarmulke, but my hair is I'm doing the comb over the yarmulke. But yeah, I mean, Judaism experiences that extremism as well.
Right. It's the same. We're not so different, man. Honestly, Judaism and Islam is like a lot of the same repression.
Yeah, I guess as far as I know, there's not many violent. Like that's where the line is drawn, is the violence.
Right. I mean, Palestine isn't exactly, you guys aren't like hugging them, or, you know.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't
know. Exactly high-fiving Palestine.
It's great sharing this land.
But yeah, dude.
But I mean, so it must be glaringly obvious in Bangladesh because your neighbor is India and it's mostly Hindu.
No, Bangladesh is mostly Muslim.
Right, Bangladesh
is India is, I don't know the set. I think it's majority Hindu, but it's a big, big Muslim population. Huge.
It is.
Huge.
So, but how different are the cultures and the countries?
India's more progressing. India's definitely progressing faster. It's got IT now, the outsourcing. They're outsourcing to India. They're not outsourcing to Bangladesh. That's not happening.
Why is that?
Our infrastructure's worse. We have less of an economy. I mean, India's huge. India's huge, a lot of manpower. Bangladesh is tiny. It's the most densely populated country in the world, and we don't have enough resources.
Okay.
And we get monsoon every year, which destroy our GDP half the time. You know, so whatever GDP we accrue is destroyed in this monsoon. It's terrible. Bangladesh has got a lot of problems infrastructure-wise. And just India's just had a lot more influences. British people came into India, which was Bangladesh too, but there's the infrastructure was set up in Delhi, in Calcutta, which is India, and so they have a lot of the benefits of like, you know, the modernization of the industrialization. Bangladesh didn't get it as much, and we're struggling. It's a smaller country, and it's sinking, and it's a lot more.
The land is actually sinking.
Yeah. It's a peninsula. And geographically, it is sinking, and it is just, it's not good. Going to be mass migration in 50 years. Who knows?
So we'll be talking about the Bangladesh refugees.
Right. Oh, dude. I'm getting those jokes ready now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Starting to write the premises now. Be right there.
Yeah. By the time that's in the news, you'll be on it.
Because I know I'm going to inspire a legion of Bengali comedians, so I got to be ready.
You're the Bengali ambassador of comedy.
Baby. But yeah, man, I'm gonna try to do some stand up in Bangladesh too, maybe if I can find it.
Does it exist there?
I don't know, dude. I saw a video of a guy doing stand up in Bangladesh, and dude, nobody laughed, but they were just clapping if they liked a joke. Well, so there's no laughs, but there was 18 applause breaks.
But you would be in a third or fourth grade level of jokes.
Exactly.
You're doing like knock knock jokes.
Straight up, dude. I would be like, I have no idea how to relate to these people. So we'll see.
Yeah. When did you start to learn English?
Just, you know, normally. I'm born in Canada, so.
So like around 14, like me?
Yeah.
So you grew up learning English. You grew up speaking English in public in schools, but
yes.
Your family spoke
Bengali. Yeah, Bengali. I was always Bengali. Mom used to like beat my ass if I didn't speak Bengali. Yeah,
but they speak English as well.
They do. My mom is kind of, you know, like this, but you know, it's not really that expansive. But she's actually, you know, she can have a conversation. She can work in America, but a lot of the cultural stuff goes over her head because she doesn't even want to deal with it, you know. So she might not know that Bill Cosby's a rapist. She has no idea because she doesn't care. She's just like, fuck American culture. I'm just here cooking and watching my Bengali TV and my family, and she's chill, which is a way to live, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's interesting when people and cultures come here and just don't.
Bro, it's weird because they stop growing in their culture, but my country's still growing in culture.
Right.
As so Bangladesh is getting modernizing. This is modernizing, and you have this idea from 1970. It's a weird, a lot of Chinese parents, a lot of Bengali parents have that, where they stop, they bring back this old version of culture
right.
to America, even not knowing or
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Believing that their country is changing as well.
No, weirdly. Do you think that's because people like to just hear their beliefs enforced?
Reinforced? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So you come here, you just want to hang out with your people, mm-hmm. and then you want to hate on the race you want to hate on, you know, because every race has the one race they hate. Mm-hmm. Dude, if you go to these brown parties, bro, it's like, it's brutal.
So today's Thursday, on Saturday, you're going to Bangladesh.
Yeah, man.
How often do you go back?
Last time I went back was 7 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. All my cousins are married now. So we're going to be a totally different thing. Totally different energy. But
yeah. I mean, you're different, I imagine.
I'm mad different.
Yeah.
Mad different. I didn't even do comedy back then. I started comedy like 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's like it was before comedy. It was during college. Everyone looked at me nicely because I was going to be a med school doctor. And now I'm coming home to Bangladesh with this new passion.
Yeah.
And they're going to want to hear jokes. And I'm not going to know how to relate to them. That's really what's on my mind right now. It's like, how am I going to make these people laugh?
I'm a little concerned. let me tell you why I'm concerned. Because you're doing stand-up comedy every night. Sometimes just here, in New York City, I'll be out at a party or with just, you know, non-stand-up comedians. Right. And you kind of have to watch yourself because we make jokes with each other that are really edgy and biting.
Right, right.
But if you do that to people that aren't
stand-ups. Forward thinking, dude. Oh, my God. You said the forward thinking joke to these people? They're like,
oh, exactly. Exactly. That joke would horrify.
Would 9/11 the party, you know?
Yes. Pretty much. That would be like terror alert orange and every party be over. So, like, I have to keep that in mind just here in my own city.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm concerned that you're going to forget.
You know, oh, dude, I don't know, man. I love my Bengali culture. I love it. I'm very proud of it. I love my cousins. I know I've been shitting on them all podcasts, but like, I love them. I love where I'm going. I really am proud of it. But first of all, 2.5 weeks, no stand up. I'm a guy who does like 3 to 4 sets a night. So it's like,
yeah,
when I can't get that, that's what I'm really not looking forward to. But
so 2.5 weeks, you'll be back. So if you're not back in like 3 or 4 weeks,
release the podcast and release an Ember Alert. Like,
yes,
like it's going to be, oh, geez. I look like such a recruit. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm walking in the street of Bangladesh and an ISIS terrorist sees me, he's like, excellent. I like that guy.
Yeah.
I can work. You know, I just look like impressionable. I look like a guy who's like, yeah, I'll take your brochure. Like, I have resting, I'll join your cause face. You know? That's what I think I do. And so, like, I gotta be careful, I think.
So, have you experienced sort of bigotry and racism here? Not only by the way you look, but having the name Usama Siddique.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the way you said it was so funny. And just that, Usama Siddique.
Is that correct?
Like I was a Kenyan tribal chief. A little
oh, really?
Usama Siddique.
Is it pronounced Siddique?
Usama Siddique.
Siddique.
Yeah, it's Usama Siddique. But like there's Siddiqui is like American. How you pronounce it?
How is it pronounced? Native.
Usama Siddique.
Okay. Usama Siddique.
Siddique. Yeah. Siddique. Yeah. Yeah. A little bounce on the D. Usama Siddique.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bounce on the D.
Bounce on the D, baby.
You can use that.
Hey, there you go. Bringing it full circle. Bringing it full circle. But yeah, man, that's everything you said is very pertinent to my fears of going to Bangladesh.
Yeah. But have you experienced that sort of racism, bigotry here?
Yeah, a little bit. Mostly in the beginning of 9/11, after 9/11, a little bit.
And it's mostly because of your first name.
First name, a little bit brown too. I mean, in the South, it's a little bit more okay. People are a little more okay, like shitting on racists. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, yeah, he doesn't care. You're good. But we might not be, you know. But I mean, I never found it a problem. I just wanted to be funny, you know. And yeah. Just, if someone was coming at me, I had a chance to be funny. So I liked it.
It never bothered you? No. You've never been taken off an airplane or denied a flight?
No. I have been randomly searched every single time. That's a true thing, the random searches.
Yeah.
That's every single time.
They do search you every time?
Every time, especially in international flights. I went to Turkey once, and it's not like they do it very authoritatively. They come in like salespeople, like they're about to sell you Metro PCS. Or like, hey, buddy, come on over here. We're just hanging out. He's like a gun. He's like, yeah. We're just hanging out. Just tell me right now, why are you going to Turkey? Just ask. It's like a weird, weird PC thing.
I know. You know what it is? It's cop psychology.
Right.
I'm your best buddy.
Come
you can open up.
If you're going to blow something up, tell me. We'll blow it up together.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And it's like, and I was like, yeah, I'm just going there to visit and just like, visit what? Visit who? Where? And I was like, yeah, fuck, I know what's going on here.
Well, I think they're taught to speak to you that way so you feel comfortable and open up to them.
Telling your plans, right? Oh, you're right. My blueprints are right here. Sorry.
I'm glad you're an ally.
Yeah, yeah, thank God. Okay. So that kind of stuff happens. Another thing that happens racism-wise is like girls don't see Indian dudes as desirable sometimes, as virile growing up because that's one of those.
But you're not Indian.
Same thing, bro. It's not like the girl making a distinction between Bengalis and Indians.
It's not the same thing to you, though.
Yeah, I'm half Indian, too.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Because my dad's from Kolkata, which is a Bengali-speaking part of India.
Okay.
So nationalistically, I'm half Indian, half Bengali. Ethnically, I'm full Bengali.
Okay, so you don't take insults. It's like if someone calls you Indian.
No way. No way.
Like you're Japanese and they're calling you Chinese.
Right, they have that. We don't have that. It's whatever. I think an Indian guy might get offended if I call them Bangladeshi because we're lower on the status-wise globally. Yes, but
it's always that.
Right.
But you've probably also been called like Arab and other random shit by people that called, don't know
I've
what been, they're talking
right,
about.
Right, I've been called Mohammed, which is the worst racial slur, you know? But yeah, a lot of things. But a lot, the most of the stigma was like growing up was that girls didn't find you attractive because brown was weird and not don't like brown people. They're terrorists, whatever.
Now, how much of that is just because of media and culture?
Most of it. But the thing is also, if you play upon humans' fear, they become fearful. You know, like
right.
So it's like it was a positive feedback loop. The more fear they showed, the more fear they displayed, or aversion, or whatever. What have you?
You just nailed the recipe of Fox News.
Yeah. Oh, dude. That's it.
That's the
two
cycle.
Cups bigotry, three cups hate blacks, and then you know stir and stir up the people.
I mean, even before terrorism was part of the conversation, when I was a kid, years before 9/11.
Right.
Indians were made fun of. They were picked on. They were called smelly.
And
things like that. There was no association with any kind of terrorism.
Where'd you grow up?
Long Island.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
So any you know, I grew up in mostly a white neighborhood. Right. So Asians, Indians, anyone, you know, non-whites were picked on.
Right. Because they were and then after 9/11, it's like a whole new dimension to the hate or the aversion or whatever. But...
So do you relate to, say, a black person here in that sense?
Oh, yeah. Most minorities, there's already like an intrinsic, like, we get it. Because there's like an outsider element. Like, same kind of conflicts a lot of times against the whites, you know? So,
see, you just pointed at me and Matt. And I have a problem with this because...
Oh, shit, I'm just joking. But yeah, no, let's talk about it.
No, because I don't feel... like a white person a lot because I have been removed from an airplane because they thought
I was
a terrorist.
Crazy. That's so insane, dude.
It's insane to me as
well. That's wild. That's so
but
wild.
Yeah, they took me off the plane.
Excuse me, Gary. We're gonna, you know, like kicking a guy named Gary out of a plane.
Oh. Yeah, I've been denied a hotel room,
dude.
I've been in Austria sitting around and they've been talking about dirty Jews.
Oh, dude,
not knowing I was Jewish.
Yeah, both. Yeah, fuck, man. That's uncool as fuck.
Yes, yeah,
so and you're white.
Yeah, it's like I got the worst. Situation.
That's so funny, dude. Oh my god.
And here I am talking to an Osama who's never been taken off a flight.
Right. They're like, because they're weird. Like, we want to make sure you're okay. You know, you want extra chips.
Well, I'm glad this podcast is bringing world peace, though.
Right. I mean,
it's like two Jews talking to a Muslim.
Instead of, you know what? If they offer the 9/11 terrorists like an extra pillow, maybe. Maybe they were. They,
I mean, they did put me on the next flight in my very own seat.
But yeah, it's I find it reviling to like that whole discrimination stuff. But like, it's a natural expression. It's a natural expression of fear, mm-hmm. which you can't really hate them.
Yeah,
people for it, which is. Fear and division. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the game with America now.
Now, like, besides the religion, are you going to have trouble adapting to the culture of Bangladesh? I mean, there's a lot of
Bengalis intense there.
Meat eating. Yeah, how are you going to deal with all those Bengalis?
It's pretty intense.
Like, they eat a lot of goat, right?
Yeah, I eat goat.
You do eat goat, yeah. Okay.
Do I look vegetarian to you?
Well, you're skinny like a vegetarian.
I know it. Well, a lot of meat, a lot of goat, a lot of eat, all that shit. I mean, I'm going to be fine.
But like here, when we eat meat, it doesn't really resemble an animal so much.
Right.
And anytime it does, like, people don't want a fish served with eyeballs here.
Right.
They don't want to see the eyes. They don't want to see the nose.
Oh, dude, I eat fish eyeballs all the time. Whenever I eat fish, I eat eyeballs. I eat the ass. I squeeze out the anus, and I don't eat that. But like, I eat all the fish. Bengalis are huge fish eaters. Huge. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was in your research.
No, but, I missed that.
Bengalis.
I got caught up on the capital of Bangladesh, which is Dhaka.
Dhaka, yeah. Dhaka's a trip, dude. Dhaka's a trip, dude. If you go to any, you guys probably go to Bombay or New Delhi, but it's a trip, dude. It is so insane.
Why is the capital of Bangladesh a trip?
It's great. It's just like the most overcrowded place in the world, right? Mm-hmm. You know how there's like four lanes here? There's the same width of road, but they add six more lanes in Bangladesh. Uh-huh. That makes sense. You can't even imagine that. You can't even think of this.
Well, I've been to Poland, and in Poland, you know, there's super poor parts of Poland, and the main highway in Poland is literally one lane, and to pass, you have to drive in the oncoming traffic lane, and every time you want to pass, you risk your life because another truck coming.
It's
scary.
That's what it is. And dude, there's no crashes. Nobody crashes, and just seeing these drivers, this is like insane. They are geniuses.
It makes sense why your people are perfect for New York City cabbies.
Yes, dude.
Now, was that racist?
The way you say things is nice. I know you look like Nazi youth, but like the way you say it is so tender.
It's a delivery.
It's
true. Matt's the only Jew that looks like a Nazi.
It's perfect. Thank you, Hans / Matt.
He's got it all covered.
Works.
Right.
Hans Kaplan.
Hans Kaplan, dude. Yes, I highly suggest you guys go there once. Probably India more than Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. I'd suggest probably Bombay or like New Delhi or like Madras is like southern. Mm-hmm. But like, these places would blow your mind.
So the rampant, like almost like very flagrant meat eating with animals, that doesn't bother you whatsoever, like blood of the eyeball.
I used to film the sacrifices, for Eid, Al-Adha. Uh-huh. They used to sacrifice a goat. I used to watch it. I used to see it. It's a very part of my life, you know. There's no abuse. I mean, as opposed to they're killing them, right? But it's not like the practices there are actually a little more humane. It's not as cramped. They actually have space for these things. I mean, they kill them. Like, we're all eating. But the sort of, you know, in America, they just keep the chickens in like a cage that's smaller than their body.
Chop their beaks.
That's not a thing. They don't do that shit in Bangladesh, which is interesting. Because they you can buy live chickens. So like a vast majority of these people buy the chickens live, kill them in their house.
Right.
And so it's like this, it's more natural.
Do you think Paul McCartney would enjoy Bangladesh cuisine?
No. But then again, they played to help us, right?
George Harrison.
Yeah. So, they must have had some affinity. And
Is that why Paul McCartney did not participate in the concert of Bangladesh?
Right. He's like, listen, I need commodes. All right. I'm not going to do the squat thing you guys do here. But the Bangladesh is like Bill Clinton came once, mm-hmm. right? And then
why did Bill Clinton go?
I think it was like a diplomatic thing. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what. Country's pretty new. Bangladesh as a country is like 30 years old, 40 years old.
Oh, it's a very new.
Because the partition happened. British used to rule India, right? Mm-hmm. Partition happened in 47. That changed India, the whole India, to Pakistan, India, and East Pakistan.
Right? The British did that.
And wow. they gave Pakistan our country, right? Pakistan tried to enforce martial law eventually. We're like, dude, we're culturally, ethnically, and geographically apart from you.
Yeah.
Let us have our own country. They're like, no. Classic American Revolution thing. Soldiers came in. India helped us out. We agree, you know, we fought against them. We won in 1970 something. And then my mom's brother fought in the war.
Yeah.
My mom evacuated her house and moved to like three villages over because there were Pakistanis coming and murdering people. And then we fought for independence. Mm-hmm. A lot of Pakistanis committed a lot of genocide. Yeah, but it's like an unknown genocide. It's like an indie genocide, you know? And nobody really knows about it. And it's like, no Pakistanis know about it for sure. But yeah, it's like it's 40 years ago that a war, we won the war, and then we named our country Bangladesh.
See, does all this background make you feel separated from what you're here in New York, you're doing stand-up, right. You're hanging around with a lot of people with like, oh, I can't make enough money, I can't afford this burrito, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm removed from it. It's not like I have flashbacks of mm-hmm. machetes or anything, but
your sense of despair right. Like is just on such a different scale.
It's a different scale, man. It's a different scale, like the burrito.
Oh, you couldn't get extra guacamole in your burrito? I'm so sorry.
The amount of rice in that burrito could feed a family of five for like 5 days.
When people complain about their food or whatever.
It's too much rice. Dude, my mom's biggest thing about this country is the food waste. She cannot stand it. Like, one day she went to my school and she saw the trash can full of food and it almost made her cry. Like, she's like, what the fuck is going on here?
It's interesting that you mentioned rice because that is my biggest complaint about New York burritos.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that there's too
send
much
that
rice.
Rice back to Bangladesh, all right? I don't want that shit here. But yeah, man, it's a whole different algorithm for how they live. And I'm suggesting again, just go there and check it out.
Yeah.
It's
fucking insane. And are you a little nervous to go there?
A little bit, dude.
Yeah.
A little bit. I love the culture. I love everything about it. Mm-hmm. I really do love my country. It's just, it's militant now, man. It's a different place.
Before we move on from this, how much are you able to separate the religion and the country culture? Or is it just one big thing?
A lot of it feeds on each other, so it's hard to separate it. Mm-hmm. You know, the culture is affected by the religion. The religion is kind of affected by the culture. The religion is more stagnant. It's more like the static, like, this is the religion. The culture is the one that's always changing, you know, taking ideas, moving back, you know, rights, not rights. Oh, that's a flux, always.
They don't have a separation of mosque and state there?
Right, nice. No.
It does not.
Bangladesh is a democracy. It's a secular democracy. Uh-huh. Recently, in the last 5 years, different elements and factions have come up and try to overrule and overthrow these secular elements. And it's like, who's winning is a battle right now. Pakistan is much more religious. They have much more sacred sort of people, whatever you call them, in the positions of power.
But all the leaders are Muslim?
Mostly.
Yeah.
Mostly. If
you're gonna, not all.
Not all. I mean, it's a majority Muslim country. Muslims are going to win, right?
Right. When they do political stuff, do they include the Muslim prayer or stuff like that?
There's a separation of mosque and state.
There is.
There's no prayers during town meetings or something like that. It's not as stringent as that. We're much more chill.
I mean, just that saying, separation of church and state, kind of just says that we're a Christian nation.
Right. Oh, God.
It's not separation of synagogue and state.
Right. It's very, yeah, exactly. Christians is the whole thing, but.
Yeah. All right. That's intense stuff.
A lot of intense. Yeah, I get it. Woof.
Yeah. I think now would be a good time because I also, in my research, Usama is an excellent beatboxer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Can we take a beatboxing break?
Yeah,
can we
hear this? Sure. Okay, here we go.
Wait, before you start, Matt is a bass player.
Oh, shit?
Yeah, Matt can play some serious bass.
Ooh, we can make some music, man.
Yeah.
So Matt can play some serious.
So if you want to jump on the bass, Matt, do it.
Oh, you want
to vocal bass?
Right?
All right. Start off. I'll jump
in. All right, here we go. What's the name of this podcast?
The Gary Hour.
The Gary. Yeah.
Oh, I think you could do more.
Oh,
than
shit.
That.
All right. Yeah.
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 That's
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
That's awesome, man. Second musical performance on this podcast.
Oh, shit?
Yeah.
Nice. That was good.
So wait, did you learn to do that as a survival mechanism?
Nah. It was like in sophomore year of college before I started comedy. I felt very talentless.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want more talents.
Mm.
And so I was like, what do I do? And I always liked percussion. And I was like, percussion was, anytime I listen to music, I'm always listening to the drums. And I was like, let me just start learning this shit. And I just,
what do you mean you felt talentless?
Oh, it's just one of those days where I was searching for an identity. Like in college, you're looking for an identity.
Identity, yeah.
Right. So it's like, who am I? Am I this guy? Am I this guy? I didn't feel like being smart was enough of an identity for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, I'm smart. Who cares? Anyone
It's not a cool identity.
It's not a cool identity. So I remember in sophomore year, I was like, I want something like for me mm-hmm. that I could do. And I just chose beatboxing. And I was like, hours of YouTube videos, hours of like, because just doing the... Just that sound, to get that, to have that bass requires so much shit sounds. So you got to work your cheek muscles. So just that getting better at something, I just loved it. And I just, this guy named Fat Tony on YouTube taught, he still has them right now. You can honestly learn them right now. And I just went on YouTube and just learned for like a couple of years. I've been doing it for like 6 years now, yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, just on the side. Yeah, and then I found comedy, and then comedy became everything. So now I don't do as much beatboxing, but I still have that kind of...
So beatboxing is your backup career.
Backup career, baby. no one's done it before, but mm-hmm. that's the thing, you know? Because all those old guys, you know, Biz Markie and, you know, yeah. those guys, they're good, but I mean, they don't really know how far it's come. Like beatboxing right. has come so far.
Right. Well, hip-hop also, I mean.
Yeah.
You hear the flows compared to the old days.
Yeah. Eminem versus, you know, yeah. Like Melly Mel or Chuck D. It's just very simple. Yeah, they're phenomenal. They're powerful. They paved the way. But you don't. I mean, Chuck D can never do what Eminem can do. There's exactly. no way. You
know? Eminem could do what Chuck D did
for sure. And no, Eminem would never say that. Eminem would never say that because there's so much respect for those old guys.
Yeah,
so much respect. But like, let's be real.
Yeah, and you got to put it in context.
Yeah,
too.
Just watching you now, there are so many different muscles moving in your face, your right. neck, your throat. Yeah, with like Biz Markie, it's just kind of one thing.
He's just having a stroke while beatboxing.
I've seen him perform in a small venue, and he's like looks like he might die at any moment.
His hi-hat is him having diabetes.
Like his big trick is like putting a mic to like different parts of his head and neck to get different sounds.
That's what he does. Get out of here. He's come a long way. But I mean, without Biz Markie, there would be no. You know,
of course,
you gotta respect it. You gotta, mm-hmm. you know, it's a different time.
So what was the first comedy bug to bite you? Who was it? Which happened?
Louis C.K. Louis C.K. He did the bit. I don't know if you know. Do you know his bits?
Oh yeah.
He did the bit about the why.
Mm-hmm. With the
why?
Kids?
Yeah, because this. That. Why? Because some things are and some things aren't. And I remember I was watching this and I was laughing so. No, I've laughed really hard in my life, but I've never laughed at someone on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
One guy made me fall out of my chair. I thought I was genuinely gonna die. Not like a fun thing. And I'm like, I might die. I thought I was gonna die because I could not stop laughing.
You thought
you
were gonna have a heart attack?
I thought, literally, like, I thought this is the end. I'm gonna die laughing. It's not even like, I want to stress to you how real I thought I was gonna die. Like, I was like ready to die because it was so funny to me.
Well, can I just, this is a big compliment to you that was one that bit you, because that bit, his daughter keeps asking why is the sky blue? Why is it, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's a pretty intense philosophical bit.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you're like, oh, I heard some fart joke and I was
right,
my God.
Right. It was a bit, because really what I was laughing at is Louis's talking, but also his attitude, his point of view was just getting more and more angry at this little kid.
But you also probably knew, like, this is like a big psychological, philosophical question.
Right. Because some things are and some things aren't. I just could not handle it, how funny that was.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, dude. And I remember
that's a testament to your smarts.
Right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I remember after I got up, and first of all, I thank God for not dying, because I was really sure I was going to die. And then I was like, whatever that is, what the fuck is that? What just happened there?
Now, you just said you thank God. Do you believe in God? Do you pray to God?
I don't pray to God. I believe in a God.
You
or
do.
Some sort of higher power, some sort of element. Is the word God is a weird, because when I say God, it puts my mind back into all those repression ideals that I had growing up.
Why do you believe in God?
It's like we definitely don't know. We definitely don't know. So either you choose to believe or you don't choose. And I'm just like, I'll believe. Yeah, I'll take the leap.
So you're taking the leap of faith.
I think humans don't know everything. And there's some arrogant humans who think that they can use only logic to figure out if God exists or not. You can't use theology or logic or any logic to figure out if this is it. Because if it is true, it's going to be on such a different plane mm-hmm. that nothing you can arrive at on your own mind would allow you. So either you choose or you don't, you know? And so I just choose to believe because it humbles me. It does a lot of good things for me. Like, it takes out the ego that I have. Mm-hmm. It does a lot of good things. So yeah, on just like a practical level, believing in God is helpful for me.
So you're using your faith in a way that benefits you. So do you pray to a God that's outside of yourself?
I don't pray specifically, but I contact a God. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'll try to communicate with him. Is that yeah. praying? I don't know, whatever. But
you're talking to someone outside of yourself.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And I believe in that. For me, I don't even care what happens after I die as long as I remember that I was Osama. I don't give a shit if I'm burning in hell. I don't give a shit if I'm in heaven. Just so I know that I was Osama growing up, or I had a life in Osama. Because the worst thing would be if you did all these good deeds, then you woke up in heaven as a different person because you lost your consciousness.
Yeah.
So some guy is riding your fucking journey, uh-huh. and this guy just wakes up. He's like, "Oh, I'm in heaven now. What's going on?"
Wait, is this a Hindu thing where you're reincarnated as somebody else?
No. This is me thinking like, all right, if you don't keep your consciousness, you know, your memory that you were alive,
yeah,
into heaven. Like you just like God is all real and Christianity is all real and Islam mm-hmm. is all real. It's all real.
Right.
But the one thing they didn't say is that you didn't keep your consciousness going to heaven.
Yes.
Bullshit. I don't give a shit. Just let me know that I was Osama. I don't give a shit.
Well, that's a big thing yeah. when people die is like, I used to live in Los Angeles and there was like a major earthquake happening and I was with two of my friends and we're like, whoa, like the whole house is just, so we got under the doorway and we're holding hands and we're just like, let's just stay conscious through this. Right. If we die, let's just stay conscious.
Right.
And that was the big thing.
You thought you were going to die, by the way.
Yeah.
So your only hope is exactly what I want. Just, I want to be me wherever I am.
Stay conscious and aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I was an entity. Maybe I'm not alive anymore, but me knowing that at one point I was alive. Who knows what's going to happen? Who the fuck knows? But that's my ideal. Mm-hmm. That's my ideal.
So when you pray to God, do you hear a voice coming back to you?
Not quite. Not really. I do feel a presence sometimes. But that could be like just like a, you know, a neuronal thing. I don't know. Do you ever feel that? Do you ever feel like a voice coming back? You said you're spiritual.
Yeah, I guess I don't pray to an outside thing. I believe in energy. Okay, but okay. Yeah, maybe that's a fault of mine, but it's not an outside thing.
I think for a lot of people, it's just a way that they can be completely honest with themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, this is something I would never say out loud or think, you know, or communicate to another person, but I'm putting it out to my God.
Right.
This is how I'm truly, honestly feeling, and it's just, it feels good to get that out and feel that someone else heard it.
Right. It's like a responsibility transfer. It's like taking the weight off you and putting into this outside source that's very benevolent and accepting. And it's like a very healthy thing to do, like take out the intensity, because your ego is always getting shaken in this world. So like releasing that responsibility to like God or whatever.
Now, are you asking for something in return, or you just
no? I stopped doing that because the day I stopped doing that was I saw a soccer and the two teams praying to God. I'm like, this is ridiculous. What is going on here? And
they both can't win.
So someone's happened, you know. And then God's like, if you didn't fuck that one girl, I would have given it to you. Mm. So I said like, fuck that. I'm not about asking. I'm about appreciating, you know, and just letting the energy go where it may, you know.
So without taking the potency out of a prayer, but like, what can you give me a specific example of how you would pray to an outside?
Like if I do something really wrong, I'll be like, I'm sorry. But who am I saying sorry to? I'm saying sorry to the God.
Okay.
I'm saying, I'm sorry. I regret this. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And then I'll say, I forgive myself. And then it's like a thing where I can get back to my center. Cause I'm all about like, no matter how much stimuli attacks you in the world, get back to a center.
Right.
And New York is a place where it just feeds you stimuli that shakes your ego to its core. That's what New York is, really. That's what's so hard about this place. It's just the ego is getting fed and destroyed every day.
It's very humbling.
Humbling, right. So to keep a center of mind is a very important thing to me to do every day, making sure that no matter what happens, stay at a level area. And that happens through mental algorithms and prayers, quote, that you make outside yourself and stuff. Like, so a combination of prayers and mantras help me navigate this insanity.
It helps you stay strong,
centered. Fortitude in the face of adversity, all that sort of shit.
Yeah. I always think of Marge Simpson with New York City. When the Simpsons come to New York, she goes, all of a sudden, I feel like a big nobody.
Yeah. Homer. Homer. Oh, my God.
So the Louis C.K. bit was the first thing that turned you on to stand up. And you're like, wow, a guy can just do that.
One guy can do that. Yo, I like that. Maybe I have a thirst for power. I don't know depth why I love this so much, but I just love that. Like I loved what he did. And after that, I was just huge comedy fan.
I love that why bit as well. Yeah. Have you ever seen he turned that bit into a scene in Lucky Louie?
No. I saw bits and pieces of that sitcom. I never saw the whole thing.
But. That whole bit is acted out in a scene, and it was kind of cool to see that because I saw it after I saw it as a stand up.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, cool. Look, there's that bit.
Oh, so cool.
In sitcom form.
I got to see Lucky Louie. I heard it's a really good show.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of like the Honeymooner set.
Right.
It feels very...
There's that one episode where like the guy, one of his friends has like an amazing Cosby accent. And he debuts it at the party. And his wife's like, no, don't do it. You don't do that accent. You know you're not good at it. And he's like, honey, I'm good. I'm good at the accent. I know that. And like everyone's kind of enjoying it. But the wife is like, oh. And like at when they go back home, the wife's like, you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to do that. And as she leaves, he's like... I'll see you later, bitch. And then he calls her a bitch, but in the Cosby accent, it's, right. It's amazing, like hilarious. It's like it takes the Cosby accent.
Cosby would never talk to a woman
like
that.
Right. This is also pre-Cosby, but you know, maybe there's some prophetic stuff in there, you know?
Right. Isn't that ironic that Cosby would never call a woman a bitch?
Right, because she couldn't hear it because she already passed out.
Right.
it's interesting that it was Louis who seems like, in certain ways, at least on a surface level, completely opposite you culturally.
Yes. Almost nothing. Right. Connects in terms of culture.
We're often, and it's nice to hear, but often, especially with minorities, people of color, their big inspiration is someone who they relate to. So right. That comes from
right. For me, relating to someone isn't the hugest thing. It's like, what is he saying? And if you really just look, if you like, because most people, when you don't relate to someone, it's almost on you sometimes because you're mm-hmm. not willing to give the empathy required to meet someone halfway.
Yeah,
you know. And so when I see a guy who only has one type of taste, I'm like, that guy might not be as empathetic.
Big word.
Because he's only has people that are close to him. He doesn't have to move far to understand something. And that empathy is all about understanding and then going, meeting someone somewhere, like spiritually. And
emotionally.
Emotionally. That's what I really meant. Yeah. Louis, when I saw him, I was like, this guy is so much talent. I was like totally vibing with what he's saying. His energy was beautiful. I loved Louis when I first started. Then I found Bill Burr and I was like, fuck yeah. And then
you're just you're connecting with the people like Matt says. Yeah, so different
for me. And I did like Russell Peters. I did like him growing up. I thought he was a very funny guy. This is before I had a sense of humor, you know. And
take that, Russell.
Bam. He'll go back to having millions of dollars after this podcast.
Yeah, he'll be heartbroken. Yeah. Sure. But how about Aziz Ansari?
Aziz, I like his energy. I think on a quality of stand-up level, his first special was phenomenal. I think it was great. Then he did this thing where like Louis said this thing where like I'm putting out one special a year, and then he was like, me too. And then he just kept doing it, but he wasn't good enough to put out one special a year.
Uh-huh.
So his material very much suffered. And people are telling me now, like, dude, he stopped for a year, 2 years. Now his shit's really good.
Yeah.
So people are saying it's back to being amazing. And I got to see him now. I got to see.
So you don't feel a stronger connection because he's...
Oh, no way. Brown people, I when I was growing up, very much so. I only had brown friends only because I couldn't really understand things. But now as I do more stand-up, I'm getting more empathy. It's like you learn how to give more to people you might not instantly relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you just have a brown friend, that's you engaging in instant gratification. It's like, oh, this is the quickest way to friendship is a brown friend because we have commonalities, a very easy way to relate to each other. It's an easy mode of friendship.
Right.
Right? Where you, but you meet a guy in the hood in Harlem and you don't understand anything he's saying. But that friendship has the potential of being much stronger as well. Mm. You know, we're as strong. I mean, it depends on a lot of things. But, right, I think it's a very valuable experience.
If you could meet together on what's more human and maybe perhaps less cultural.
Yes. The human thing is universal funny. You know? Slapstick is universal. Why? Because every fucking culture has fallen downstairs. You know, it's like
everybody farts.
Everybody farts. So you got it's everybody farts. It's only one culture. It's like, what the fuck are they doing? What is going on here?
We found this tribe in Asia that doesn't fart.
Never fart. They don't have any fart jokes. What? I would never want to hang out with those people. That's some weird shit.
They have no sense of humor.
If you can't fart, get out of my life, dude. That's for sure. But it's like, it's interesting just how people, the comedy, the differences. more pronounced. Music, you can very much like a vast swathe of humans can understand music.
Yeah,
just like a chord, it's very universal.
It goes right to the emotion,
right, like straight past all the cultural bullshit. Comedy is so much different. Where you have to really like get into someone's head. It's a very thinking man's audience. You know, you have to.
It's very heady language.
Very heady. You have to be engaged. So, someone who can kill in South Korea, I just so much respect for it, because he gets to the real heart of the human experience to make laughs happen. I'm all about that.
Do you have an ultimate goal with stand up besides being rich and famous?
Dude, I just want to. I'm all. Every day I wake up, I'm like, how do I get that hour, dude? Uh-huh. It's all about the quality of the stand up.
The quality, right?
For me, it's not like I want to make. I just want to be the greatest stand-up.
Yeah.
The greatest stand-up. I want to be the best stand-up in the world. Uh-huh. Now, I know I'm also a very logical person. I know that's not a thing. But having that in my mind brings... When you have that kind of lofty goal, you might not get to the goal, but you'll go to places because you have that goal in your mind that you wouldn't have gone to if you didn't make that goal mm-hmm. in the first place. So it's like, I love that goal, like being the best stand-up in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But... It's more like that'll create a drive in my mind to become one. Not that I need to be one. It's just having that as a goal will make me go that direction.
Do you use any of these Western like affirmation kind of things to help you?
Like, what do you mean?
Like a lot of new agey stuff is like, I am the best I can be.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or I'm getting better every day.
It's not the ones I read in books. Mm-hmm. I made my own.
You do.
There's a couple. There's one of them is like a 3-point. It's you ain't shit. We all gonna die. Just let everybody fly, right? Because I was having this trouble appreciating other people killing. Starting out in stand up, when people would kill really hard, I would have a visceral a reaction that was really just insecurity lashing out, like fuck this guy. But really, it was just me saying fuck. I don't think I'm good enough to be this guy. So I started creating these mantras like, you ain't shit. Cause you're just human. We're all gonna die. So that takes away the power of every experience,
right?
And then we let everybody fly, and that's just like 3-point things that puts me back into a good space.
I like that.
So yeah, so I found that, and after I do that, I'm very much now like a lot more empathetic, a lot more like accepting, and just life is a little more less intense every day.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of those that I use throughout the day.
Life is less intense every day.
Yes, as in like the stakes of life, as in like, you know what I'm saying, like
the weight,
like the weight. Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, it's more engaging.
Yeah.
But it's less intense. Quote unquote. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I don't have that. Like, if someone does well or someone gets successful, right. I'm so glad I don't get angry.
Right. Right. I used to have that. Now way better. I don't have that really at all.
I only get angry if I know them personally and they're an asshole.
Ah, you know? Right. Right. That's a different thing. Yes. That's a justice thing. That's like a world justice. You know?
Yeah.
But I think that helps me out. Just living like that, saying mantras every day, trying to get back to the center. That's how you create. Because when you're at the center, you're more able to give empathy. You're more able to connect. Be a man of growth. It's just a very healthy thing to like work on your mind every day. I feel
empathy is good. Do you think too much empathy could be bad?
Yeah, because then you could become a pushover, right? A little bit, because you're just always feeling it. And maybe you feel so much empathy that you're just almost gridlocked, because you're just like always feeling things and you don't do anything for yourself because you're so much. So yeah, there's anything on too much of a scale is bad, I feel like.
Yes, exactly. That's my mantra.
Right.
I'm wary of all extremes.
Right. Oh, for sure.
The answer is always a happy medium.
Okay. Because that hair is pretty not moderate, though. I'll be real.
Ah, that's my extreme. It's only because I look ugly with short hair. I swear.
That's bullshit, dude. You're a good looking guy, dude.
Thank you. Don't say that in Bangladesh.
Oh, for sure. Nice.
Man,
nice.
Thank you for talking to us. I feel like we can go on and on.
So fun. Yeah, you guys are cool as fuck, dude.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
This is
great. And good luck out there.
For sure. Yeah. I'll need it. Yeah, dang.
Really hope I see you again.
Oh my God, dude. I'll text you when I come back. I'm like, yo, I made it.
Please do.
See you, man.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.